بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Andalusia, the present Spain, for approximately 8 centuries, Muslims had ruled over it. Perhaps from the time of the Tabi'in, Tariq ibn Ziyad was the conqueror of this country. The very great, great ulama, luminaries that were born here. You find Allama Qurtubi rahmatullahi alayhi, Andalusi, Abdullah ibn Hazm, all these great luminaries were born in this area. But approximately after 8 centuries, then the mutual bickering, fighting, and one trying to excel over the other that had started commenced. And the enemy took advantage over this, and he played one against the other. When this thing starts off, then the enemy sees now how the fight is carrying on, so he plays one against the other, and then eventually this whole country had collapsed. There wasn't a Muslim that was spared. If there were any Muslims, then they had to either flee or either become Christians or they were killed. So, in its heydays, there were great ulama, great awliya, great buzrugan adin, great mashayikh in this place. And the collapse came like this. The inner fighting, inner bickering. قُلْ هُوَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَىٰ أَيَّبْ عَثَىٰ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابٌ مِّنْ فَوْقِكُمْ أَوْ مِّنْ تَحْتِ أَرْجُلِكُمْ. What can man be proud about? As we stand here, then Allah Ta'ala has the ability to pour down azab from above in the form of floods, rains. Now that we were in India, these Hindus have 4 very, very holy shrines. And one of the shrines is near Roorkee. There was such a cloud burst and a flood. All the goddesses that were placed there, all were crashed, all broke down. Approximately over 20,000 to 30,000 people are unaccounted for. So Allah Ta'ala can send punishment from above in different ways. Floods is one way, rains, then winds. So these are all the punishment that can come from above. Then in the same manner, punishment can come in the form of rulers. The rulers are tyrants, they are oppressors, and they are above you. So they can cause problems for you. Life becomes miserable, unmanageable, you can't carry on, you can't continue, whether it is your leaders, whether it's anyone that's above you. But he becomes so hard-hearted, and he becomes so inconsiderate towards you. So that becomes an adab. Either it is the leader, either it is the boss, either it is the CEO in any company and institute, he becomes so inconsiderate towards you. So the adab could come from above. أو من تحت أرجلكم, and the punishment can also come from beneath. Punishment coming from beneath can come from different ways, like earthquakes, earthquake. Earth just opens up and the hundreds and thousands of people are swallowed. And you get a tsunami from below. And the ocean just spills over. It spills over into the land and washes everybody. Hundreds and thousands of people are all washed away in its drive. Similarly, when Allah Pak says that the punishment can come from beneath you, your children can become disobedient. You worked and you strived, you brought them up. Now they are of age, but they become an embarrassment, a disgrace for you. You don't know where to hide your face away. It becomes even worse if your daughter is gone off. Your son is off, you feel embarrassed and disgraced. But if your daughter is gone off, then it's even more disgraceful. You don't know where to hide your face in shame. People come and tell you in the masjid or after, "Bhai, what happened to your son? Or what happened to your daughter? Or she eloped. What happened? Can we help you?" So you feel so disgraceful. You don't know where to hide your shame. You got the influence, you got the affluence, but you feel so miserable, you don't know what to do. So the azab can come from above. Azab can come from below. أَوْ مِنْ تَحْتِ أَرْجُلِكُمْ. Sometimes the azab above is the husband. The husband is supposed to be above the wife, so he becomes the punishment. And sometimes the azab below can be the worker. It can be the wife. The worker all are striking, chalks down. So the woman in the kitchen can say, "Pots down." So punishment can come from above, punishment come from below. You imagine now you had a nice day of roza, right? 13 hours, came home, thought now it would be some samosa, some bhajia, some good savories, etc., and curries and all that. And she's got her arms folded, and she's just sitting in the sitting room watching television. "Bhai, what about iftar?" And she gives you a nice smile, said, "Darling, I'm waiting for tawfiq to come. Allah Akbar, give me the tawfiq that I will cook, prepare food." You are still living in a town, so a little bit refined, right? So if someone is living right in the farm, right in the village, what he'll do? He'll take out his danda and give one shot, the tawfiq will come straight away. So, قُلْ هُوَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَىٰ أَيَّبْ أَثَىٰ عَلَيْكُمْ أَذَابٌ مِنْ فَوْقِكُمْ وَمِنْ تَحْتِ أَرْجُلِكُمْ. Your workers are against you. Your wife is against you. In the old days, they had mounts and animals as their vehicles and transport. That animal, that thing is not just subjecting itself to you. Something, and it's not just subjecting itself to you. So that went against you. Or your motor car, you've got a problem in the motor car. Everything is working, but your motor car is not working. So you see, أَوْ يَلْبِسَكُمْ شِيَا وَيُذِيكَ بَعْضَكُمْ بَعْصَ بَعْضٍ. So a third way is he gets one to punish the other. One person to punish the other. This person just turned against you and now he is punishing you some way or other, and you can't just get over him. He comes to the masjid and he performs there. Okay, it's a big din there and you don't know what to do, how to get rid of this person. So one person is spurred up against you and he's after you. He's after you. Outside the masjid is after you. Inside the masjid is after you. In the business place is after you. In social gatherings is after you. وَيُذِيقَ بَعْضَكُمْ بَعْصَ بَعْضَ. So this is all for man to think that قُلْ هُوَ الْقَادِرُ وَهُوَ الْقَاهِرُ فَوْقَ عِبَادِي. That do you understand how weak you are? You're standing so perfect, you're standing so strong, so smart looking, right? And Allah Ta'ala just suppresses one nerve, as a result you become paralyzed, stroke of paralysis, and the whole body, in spite of your beauty, in spite of your strength, muscles, influence, everything, and you're helpless, you can't do anything. I remember two incidents in my life, in front of me. When I say front of me, in other words, I've seen those victims, two victims I've seen. And then when you analyze those incidents, then it is the outcome of showing off or pride. It's either showing off or pride. One person came here about 30 years ago, it was. He came to the top masjid, the time the madrasa wasn't yet occurred. And young, 18, 19 years of age, he's got a nice car, he's got a little bit boastful about himself for the car that he's got, and he's showing everybody all that, whatever. And then, got his car, and he's just on the turn off, perhaps somewhere after Chatsworth, somewhere, where he's turning off. Lost control or something, with an accident, and he lost the use of all his limbs. Now you see him today, then from the waist downwards, He's totally paralyzed. Totally can't use his limbs. From the waist downwards, absolutely can't use himself. He needs someone to push him along with a wheelchair. Wherever he goes, from the age of 18, 19, he already, up till now, I see the person, and he is in that state. So, a result of showing off, result of pride, result of ostentation, show, thinking too much of yourself, in a flash of a moment, this is what happens. One alim was too proud about himself, and then there was a ship that he was traveling on. There was a shipwreck, he drowned, and he was lucky to be saved. But then, in that, he drank so much water that he lost his memory. He lost his memory to such a point that he wasn't even able to recite Surah Fatiha. Not even able to recite Surah Fatiha. Such a great alim, wrote so many kitabs in Arabic, whatever, the whole world talks about him. And then, shipwreck, he lost his memory, can't even recite Surah Fatiha. Then he had to be prompted to be taught Surah Fatiha. Gradually, after a month, 2 months, then he learned Surah Fatiha. Then he had a big celebration. Okay, now this ustaz can learn, can recite Surah Fatiha. And imagine, so is there anything that you can be proud about? Nothing you can be proud about. Another incident, I'd seen myself, not seen, but I'd seen the person, I'd seen the victim, heard the story from him perhaps directly. So, like you have, we are living in an alien culture, not living in our own culture. So they have their own ways. What they call it, baggy jumping. What kya kehte isko? Bungee jumping and all that, right? Bungee jumping and as though there were not enough monkeys and baboons to do the jumping, so you had to also assist them in jumping. So you were to do all these stupid things, right? So they went to one place where they had to jump from a bridge. The bridge must have been about, I would say, about 30 meters. 30 meters high. This building here, maybe about 15 meters only. From the ground to the roof, maybe about 15 meters, right? You can imagine double the size, double the height, 30 meters. Below was a river. So there were some white expert divers, they were diving and all that, whatever. So that is their life, because when I say that was their life, next to the madrasa, there was one baniya living, those years. So he used to come and speak to Qari Sahib. So one person commented, you know, that see these baniya people, how nice they can speak Gujarati. So pure, clean, they can speak the language. And you people all speak all broken kitchen language. So I have to come to the defense. Whatever it is, it's our children, we have to come to the defense. So I told that person, that you see, these baniyas, they don't have namaz to read, right? They don't have Ramzan Roza to keep. They don't have to go out in Jamaat. They don't have to go out to Madrasa. They don't have to learn Quran Sharif. They don't have to go for Hajj. They don't have to go for 40 days and whatever, right? They don't have to go to Khanqah and all that. Nothing they have to do. The only thing they have to do is learn Gujarati. So if they are failures in Gujarati, then what have they achieved? Absolutely nothing they have achieved. Yeah, with so many other things they got, so many other duties, still they can speak a little bit of Gujarati. It's an achievement. Although, alhamdulillah, I speak it well, but I had to defend all my friends, obviously, whatever it is. So, قُلْ هُوَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَىٰ أَيَّ مَعْثَ عَلَيْكُمْ أَذَابًا مِّنْ فَوْقِكُمْ أَوْ مِّنْ تَحْتِ أَرْجُلِكُمْ أَوْ يَلْبِسَكُمْ شِيعًا وَيُذِيقَ بَعْضَكُمْ بَأْسَ بَعْضٍ. This person here I was talking about now, so, and I'm speaking about this alien culture. You see, this alien culture, they got nothing to live for. Like, we have Allah Ta'ala to live for. You will find a Muslim, whatever it is, broken down also. But say, Allah Pak, let me die with Iman, let me be raised up with Iman. He has that concern. He has that concern, he's working in that direction. Maybe he's not at a terrific speed, but he's got that concern deep down his heart. I must die as a Muslim, I must be raised up amongst Muslims. I want to be dying a good death. At least must prompt me reciting the kalima. If in hospital, then you must come on my side. So whatever, but he's got the concern about kalima, he's got the concern about Iman in his heart. And they got nothing. What they got? Like if you look at this white life, Western life, then about 80% of their life, 85-90% of their life, is only show or entertainment. See, look at the life. From the time of Shakespeare, it's drama, right? Drama and show. Music, dancing, clubbing, right? And then, besides all that, then all these type of different sports that they have, right? Sports and events. And then, holidaying in burgs and all these type of things, right? Now, their lives are centered around all this. If you see any Western white person, right? So his life is centered around all these things. You pull these things out of him, all these things that I've mentioned, and added to that is wine and whiskey, whatever. Woman, wine, clubbing, holidaying, entertainment, sport, music, drama, play, television, etc. If you pull that out of there, can he live? But he lives for that. See, he lives for that. When he lives for that, you pull that out of him, then he can't live. Then what do I live for? See, so he lives for that. And what has happened to us is because we are socializing with them, we are living with them, our children are learning with them, and gradually their colors and their thinking begin to rub onto us. Now we don't realize that when you socialize, when you mix up with people, then gradually but surely you begin to take on their colors. I have to be very, very careful. When you are socializing, then you can't say that, you know, we are one and the same. Can't say one and the same. Are you different? You're a different class, you're a different class. We can't be mixing up with you. We'll just see you from the far, that's it. But we can't become too thick with you. Because you become thick with us, or we become thick with you, then we'll begin to take on your colors. If you take on our colors, it's all right, but we can't take your colors. And don't you see, it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. I was just thinking to myself, see, we're reading nowadays namaz on the chairs. A lot of people are reading namaz on chairs. One is someone has got excruciating pain, right? For him to sit on a chair and perform namaz, it's all right, no problem. Or he's old, and if he goes into sajda, he goes into a sitting position on the ground, then for him to pick himself becomes very difficult. Or the doctor has advised him that you don't sit on the ground, it's going to be deteriorating to your health. So this person is an exception. But now it becomes a fashionable thing, then that's dangerous. Right. You rather sit on the ground and make the postures with signs than sitting on the chair. Because this is closer to the sunnah. The Sahaba Kiram, there may have been also people among the Sahaba Kiram that were weak and unable, but you don't hear them sitting on the chairs and performing namaz. They were on the ground. Right? It's an exception. In every case, there's an exception where there's excruciating pain. Someone has got piles. He can't pick himself up. He's weak. Some problem, some complication. So that person is an exception. But other than that, then there is no reason why he should be sitting on the chair performing namaz. I have become like a customer. A little bit of fracture, a little bit this, then I sit on the chair. Sit on the ground. But then you see this sitting on the chair, this type of a culture, right? That culture is coming from a Western background. Because in the synagogues, in the churches, they are doing the prayers on chairs. You see benches, they're all sitting down on the bench and doing the prayers, right? They also, originally in the time of Isa alayhi salam, if you look at the Bible, the Gospel, all these things that you look, then he knelt upon his knees and prayed. He prayed kneeling upon his knees. Right? So they also had similar things like we have got. But then they moved away. They went to Rome. Greek culture had rubbed onto them. They got mixed up. When they got mixed up, then they began to borrow and cut and do whatever else, right? Initially, they also were believing in one God. But when they got mixed up with Greece and all that, so they began to get greased up. They got greased up. But Greek, they had some three gods, pagan, three gods, idols and all that. So now, they had to present a religion that will go well with the Greeks. So the Greeks already believed in some three gods, right? So they also said, now we've got three gods here. So now this thing gelled very well with them and blended well. The Greeks just took it on because they say, no, this is also the same like our religion, it's just a different name. Christianity, we are worshipping some type of an idol, three idols we are worshipping. So here also they talk about three gods, so it's gelling well. So they went on to that line, you see. Now, you look at this culture, see, you have to look at it, and you have to look at it with a little bit of sight, a little bit of understanding, without bias. If you look at it with bias, then you can't understand anything. So it came from the chair, right? Then after the chair, then you see the youngsters that have pulled out their topis, right? And they're coming to the masjid, performing the namaz without their topis. But then, alright, we're not looking into the merits, whether it is faraz or sunnat, or it's a compulsory thing in namaz. We're not talking about the merits as far as the position of a topi is concerned. But we are looking from where this thing is coming. Right? This thing is coming from a Western culture. Where is it coming from? It's coming from a Western culture. Right? Like, see, wearing of a vest, right, is not a compulsory thing, but every 99% of any crowd is wearing a vest. Right? Everybody is wearing a vest. Don't you see that they're wearing a vest? Everybody is wearing an underpant. Everybody is wearing a vest. Right? So there you don't argue, it's not compulsory, it's faraz, wajib, mustahab, but you don't argue that. But you, everybody is doing it, I must do it. If I don't do it, then I am the odd one out. I must do it. But now, because nobody is wearing topi amongst the Westerners, whites, non-Muslims, nobody is wearing topi. And because they are not wearing topi, so then I'll look the odd one out amongst them if I do wear the topi. So then pull it out, so that I can identify with them, I can look similar to them, I can look identical to them. There can't be any difference. I'll be like them, same. On an occasion, I'll just wear one long Arab kurta or short sleeves, coming to the masjid. Right? After the occasion, pull the kurta out, I can wear my t-shirt, and I can be like normal, resume normal life. So now, I ask you, if you are in a mixed gathering, then how are they expected to greet you? Are you supposed to be greeted? Are you supposed to be greeted as hi, low, how are you, morning, evening? How are they expected to greet you? If a Muslim sees you, then how is he expected to greet you? One person came here, so he does some dini work and all that. So he came to the office, and he says, "I'm disgusted. I came all through the forecourt, I came to your office, but not a single child greeted you." So I told him, "No, you know, I really feel disgusted that no child had ever greeted you. But by the way, when you came through the forecourt, you parked your car and you came up, did you have a topi and came?" So no, I didn't have a topi. So no, then I don't blame those children. Because imagine, let's reverse the whole thing. You see, if you just play a little bit of mental gymnastics, then you get the whole thing right. But if you just look one way straight, you don't play any games in your mind, you can't get things straight. So I said, just imagine, if a Hindu was imposing himself upon you, saying you, "Namaste," right? Will you feel offended or not? Will you feel intimidated or not? You will feel intimidated. By the same token, if you are a Hindu and someone makes a salam on you, he feels intimidated, he feels, this person, what's wrong with him? Why is he pushing himself over me? Why is he forcing himself over me? So those children may have thought to themselves that now this may be a Hindu that is walking past, and when he's a Hindu and we're going to make him salam, then we're intimidating the person, we're forcing ourselves over him. So they said, no, the safety measure is just to keep away. They just left it at that. But what I'm saying to you, that I told him that much. He went absolutely silent. He couldn't say anything after that. But what I'm saying to you, it's such a bad thing that a person can't distinguish you, whether you are a Hindu, Christian, Buddhist, Satanist, can't distinguish what you are. You can't make out. But with a topi, with a decent topi, right now they make out at least whatever this person is, but he's a Muslim, alhamdulillah. He's my brother. If he's stuck, I need to assist him. If he's in a problem, I must assist him. Right? If I need any assistance, then I can go up to him. Like I'm traveling, for example, and I need to know a masjid. Now I see one chacha with a topi. So, "Chacha, where is the masjid?" So he will at least direct me. So there's so much of identification, there's so much of brotherhood, there's so much of friendship in that. But now you remove the topi, you're one of the crowd now. When you're one of the crowd, then you can't make out. Now you want to look for some assistance, you want for some halal food, some masjid, some direction you want, but you can't get the direction. Why? Because you can't identify the person. Imagine you're in a foreign country, right? And you see someone with a topi, right? How nice don't you feel? You feel nice. You feel warm. You feel comfortable. It's all right. There's someone of my kind. I can at least speak to him. I can get through. So now this is the second level, right? You come now from the chair onto the topi, right? Then you get some of these Arab countries. See, like this North African countries, they're not Arabs. They adopted the Arab language. They were not Arabs. Like these Berbers and all that, Algeria, and then the neighboring countries, Tunis, Algeria, all these countries here, Morocco, they weren't Arab countries. They were Berbers, right? And because they are taken on the Arabic language, people misconstrue them for being Arabic. Same applies to Egypt. Egypt also is not an Arabic country. They are a Coptic nation. Right? They had their own hieroglyphics and all that. They had their own language they had. But because they are taken on the Arabic language, therefore, now you call them Arabs. But they are not Arabs, nothing to do with Arabic. So, when you're not worried, you're not concerned, and you're not apprehensive, but careful, then you can buy into the culture. You can buy into the culture. Now look at Egypt, just as a case example. Look at Egypt, right? Around the 1930s, 1920s, 1930s, they began to reinterpret the Quran Sharif. And the, how they started the reinterpretation of the Quran Sharif, they found that now we should be living in modern times, and we can't be oblivious of what's going on. We have to identify with what's going on. So then they had the head of the Al-Azhar who legalized the slaughterings of non-Muslims. And his argument was as follows. Some Mufti Abdu or something, that was the name. And he legalized the slaughterings of non-Muslims. All non-Muslims, irrespective whether they were Christians, Hindu, whatever. But their slaughterings will all be permissible. And he argued in this way. He said, see, Christians also are guilty of polytheism, right? لَقَدْ كَفَرَ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ ثَالِثُ ثَلَاثَ. So they're also guilty of polytheism. When they're guilty of polytheism, then you call them mushriks. So they are mushriks, and Hindus are also mushriks. The Hindus also claim that their book was divine. The word was revealed, right? Like Injil and the Gospel was revealed, that was revealed also. So they are the people of the book. And if they are guilty of polytheism, then these people are guilty of polytheism. So if their meat can be permissible and halal, then why should these people be discriminated? So hence, everybody's meat will be permissible. That was the first thing. Around the 30s, 40s, the ulama came up and they pushed them away, they smashed them down. So they didn't have any weight in their arguments. Then these things carried on. Several things happened. I'm leaving out all this, but now I'm talking of the recent developments in the same. See, when you mix up with them, then you must buy into them. You see, like Christianity had mixed up with the Greeks, right? When they mixed up with the Greeks, then they began to buy into them. And then there, what you look at is what is the majority inclined towards. The majority, what are they saying? What do they say? If the majority is saying something, then that thing becomes kosher, it becomes permissible, right? So the majority in Christianity, they spoke about gay marriages, then gay marriages became permissible. The Pope had to sanction it, had to approve it, right? Then you find that the majority then spoke about abortions. Then the Pope had also to sanction it and approve it, give his approval to it, that this is also permissible. There's nothing wrong in this. So whatever the majority will say, and the Pope will then sanction it, will approve it, you see. But now we need to be apprehensive. We need to be very, very careful. If we go by the same token, then we will go also on a legitimizing and legalizing campaign. Like how they are going on a legalizing campaign. Whatever they say, whatever the public says, whatever they want, you have to make it permissible. Now, in us, look at in retrospect, right? Look in retrospect. Up until about 7 years ago, then we were dead against photography. dead against photography. The farishtas won't come and you will deprive yourself of the blessings of the malaika and you will be under so tight scrutiny and punishment hereafter. Ashadun nasi azaban yawm al qiyamah. And then Allah Pak will say on the day of Qiyamah, Ahyuma khalaqtum. So suddenly then the public pressure mounted and mounted and mounted. And where it started came from the Arabs. They said, no, this is permissible. So when it's permissible, now you have to interact and socialize with the Arabs. Right? So when you have to interact and socialize with the Arabs, then if you didn't agree with them, then you will be as though separated from them. If you didn't agree with them, you didn't gel with them, and you couldn't blend in with them, then you'll be isolated. So you don't want to remain isolated. But you don't want to remain isolated, if they're saying it's permissible, then let's go with it. Don't make it an issue, because the unity of the ummah is a very great thing. Unity is a great thing. Who's complaining, who's disputing the importance of unity? But if a bunch of robbers, if they say, hey, you know, you mustn't break away from us, you're breaking away from the unity, will you listen to them? It's a bunch of robbers, and one robber says, no, it's haram, I'm moving away. So you're breaking the unity. So will you listen, you'll accept them? No, you won't accept them. So by the same token that you won't, here also you say, no, by you going in that line, you're wrong. In other matters, we will be with you, because you are a Muslim brother. We will ask you to come to namaz. We'll ask you to come to jamaat. We'll ask you to join in the hajj, etc. But in things that are not permissible, then we'll not be part of you. You go your way, and we are not part of you. We will condemn this practice. We will not condone it because of your multitudes and because of your language. The language doesn't legalize anything, nor the numbers legalize. And nor your intention. Your intention is good, that I need to forge a unity. So to get the unity, let me legalize this. So nor the multitude, nor the numbers, nor the language. It's not a reason for legalizing. But then our people saw this. They are doing it, so why, it's not permissible? Why is it not permissible? They are doing this, then why is it not permissible? So then, explaining now this sector, Azhar and all that, they started all these things. When they started it now for us, we are in a predicament. What do we do? What do we do? About a year or 2 years ago, there was a Maulana Mufti Salman came here. So he says that he had to go to one conference in Malaysia. So it was a conference under the auspices of the Rabita. So in the conference he sees a young woman, and she's very well dolled up. Hair is open, clothes is all body fitting, body hugging clothes, all that. Hair open, dress is not right. But in the conference she sees this woman quite active. So he shied away, but then he asked, who is this woman? Well, this woman is a Sheikhatul Hadith. This is it. So for a moment, he was perplexed. He felt that this was a Hollywood singer, Bollywood or Hollywood singer, and she is a Hollywood. She is now Sheikhul Hadith, Sheikhatul Hadith. So then, knowledge in Islam just becomes a thing that is academic. There is no application of it. There is no amal of it. I was one conference, Rabita conference. And I seen the Arab mashayikh, they're coming in, right? Egypt, etc., they're coming in. All suit and tie, North Opie and all that, and they're giving their talk. Well, this is long, about 1984-85 at that time. All the suit and tie, North Opie, and they're giving big, big tafsir and all they're giving. And the whole tafsir was, about what? He says, no, this mazhabs and all that, this is dividing the ummah. This is dividing the ummah, and you must just go on the Salafiyat path, so you will not divide the ummah. So all that suit and tie and everything else was going very well. But this thing is causing a spanner in the works. Whereas, this thing is carrying on for over 1,000 years. There wasn't a problem. Now that you joined up with these Christians and these Jews and these whites and all that, now they are influencing you. And they're influencing you and coming under this banner of disuniting the ummah. So you got so heavily caught up with them. They said, you know, all this is right, but you know, this mazhab and all is not right. So they created this problem, you see. Now this was what I seen myself. Then about four or five years ago, I'm showing you where this thing all started off. Where they start off. Then to move away, to reverse it, becomes very, very, very difficult. Start one thing, then you have to compromise in the second thing, and the third thing. And one thing leads to the other. Then came to such a point, about 5 years ago, Egypt had again passed a fatwa that, you know, today's contemporary life is very, very hectic, very, very hectic, and the job pressure is so heavy, so from now onwards, you'll not perform 5 times namazes a day, you'll make 3 namazes in the day. You won't make 5 namazes in the day, you'll make 3 namazes in the day, because of job pressures. Perhaps you're struggling with something like Jamaat, Bain As-Salatin, whatever, but he says, no, now you can only make 3 namazes in the day. So that was about 5 years ago. This year now, they passed another fatwa. They passed a fatwa that, you see, people living in the northern hemisphere, and some of them, their rosas are very long, like Ireland and Wales and all that. Their rosas are over 18, 19 hours. So he says that whoever's rosa is over 15 hours or so, then they can conform with Saudi Arabia. They can conform in the iftari program with Saudi Arabia. So that means if their rosa is 19 hours and here it's 15 hours, they can just conform and break the rosa at the same time that Saudi Arabia is breaking their rosa. Understand? See how they went off the course, completely off the course. That happened here in Azhar. Then in this one of the North African countries, whether it was Tunis or Morocco or Algeria somewhere, or the head of the state, he appeared on television. At the prime time, he appeared on television. And then he's sympathizing with a Muslim. He's a Muslim. And he's sympathizing with all the viewers. He says, you know what? Today's life is very difficult. Very, very difficult. With all job pressures, and to be fasting in this state here. No, no, no. Islam is allowing. فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ وَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مَرِيدًا وَعَلَى سَفَرٍ فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ وَعَلَى الَّذِينَ يُطِيقُونَ وَفِدْيَةٌ طَعَامُ مِسْكِينٍ. Then you can leave out your fast, because it's so pressurizing. And see now, it's so pressurizing that me also, I'm also breaking my fast. In front of everybody, in public now, because everybody is viewing him, and there's some food is left in front of him and he's eating in front of everybody. See? So, it was a whole contamination of Islam, or dilution, diluting the whole Islam, you know, any direction. I was in India just now, so one brother is telling me, one alim is telling me, that in Surat there was some opening of some madrasa or school, whatever. So he was also invited, to come up. So he went up, just out of Surat perhaps, and he was invited to come. So he told them, see, if there's going to be a videoing and there's going to be women on the stage, then I'm not going to be there. He told them, made it clear to them. So as he came up, then he saw there was videoing and there were women seated on the stage. So the other alims, they, whatever reason, but they went on to give the talk with all the videos and all the women, all the men, did whatever they did. So anyway, he had to come back to his madrasa. So the car that came to drop the other ulama that was returning, so he took a lift with them and went. So the driver of the motor car asked him, "By Mulana, but why didn't you attend the conference? There was an opening and you were invited. Well, you were one of the main speakers, and why did you then turn this away and return?" He said, "No, there's videoing and this woman sitting on the stage and all that." Now look at the driver's answer. He said, "But didn't the ulama legalize photography now? Ulama ne to usko jaiz bana diya, tasveer ko." See how he's thinking, how his reasoning is. So which way he went? He felt now that tasveer and photography is totally permissible. Whatever explanation they gave, it's in its place. But what it has created in this public's mind. Now who's going to correct that public mind? Who is going to correct that public mind? So what we are getting at is قُلْ هُوَ الْقَادِرُ عَلَىٰ أَنْ يَبْعَثَ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابًا مِّن فَوْقِكُمْ أَوْ مِّن تَحْتِ أَرْجُلِكُمْ. See, when everything is getting mixed up, it's getting mixed up. Now, you'll need a crowd of people. It says, لَا يَزَالُ طَائِفَةٌ مِّنْ أُمَّتِي قَائِمِينَ عَلَىٰ حَقِّ. You'll have to stand very, very firm. No matter who it is, what they're saying. But then when it's going against the nusus, against the text, you have to, then in the defense of the truth, you have to stand. You can't say now you're breaking the unity of the ummah. That's not a sufficient answer, not a sufficient excuse. Because you'll mix up everything. Everything will mix up. There was one wealthy businessman, he came, he says, I was in my business, and in Durban, this happened right in Durban, when all this photography saga was carrying on, so he was here. So he says to me, hey, Mawlana, they spoiled my Jummah namaz, man. I want to just rush out, dart out of the masjid. I said, what happened, bhai? He said, no, I was in my business and I had to get in for Jummah namaz. So I saw a masjid and I drove in. So there was no place on the ground floor. I went on to the first floor. And there on the first floor, it was a man-sized screen. And whatever was happening downstairs, whatever the talk he was giving in namaz and khutbah, all that, all was being videoed there on top. Everything was being videoed there. Now how can you perform namaz there? The whole picture is in front of you like a booth, and you're doing your namaz behind that booth there. So how can, now it's an ordinary businessman, but this is, but where it started from, this is where it started from. See, when you went to legalize, that you didn't see that where this thing is going to head up to, when it's going to be ending up to, you didn't look at that. You just look at one side of the picture, but where it's leading up to, where it's heading towards, we didn't see all these things here. We just disregarded that, and we continued. So anything comes on the way, you're smashing it down, you're breaking it down, anything can happen, it's all right. So, we're talking of Spain, and we saw the inner bickering. The inner bickering, and what happened? There was a collapse of the entire empire. They were so powerful, so mighty, very, very mighty. Very mighty country it was. Right. But that now all is in the archives, their books, their knowledge, and their achievements is nothing more than what is in the archives. Nothing. You don't hear anything about them. So this topic, today's topic here is on this takabbur. And considering yourself to be something senior, something better than others. This thing is a destroyer. Whoever, most people that got destroyed was because of this. Whether they were learned people, whether they were pious people, whether they were prominent people. But when you analyze the reason for their collapse and their failure, that it came from this point where you became proud and arrogant. You became proud, you became arrogant, you wanted to be recognized, you wanted to be identified, you wanted that additional respect. And the antidote is humility, obviously. You need to look at your beginnings. Allah Pak exhorts us in the Quran Sharif at several occasions. Alam yakun nutfatan min mani yumna. Look at your origins, what you were. How dirty, despicable, sulalatin min ma'in mahin. In salsal, despicable, dirty, and decaying. Salsal min hama'im masnoon, decaying, sounding clay. So this was your beginning. So dirty it was that if it got onto you, then that became napak. If that was emitted, then you are in need of usal. So that's your beginning. So when that's your beginning, then how can you be proud of yourself? Then look at your beginning again. You can't discriminate from filth and cleanliness. The child, the small little child, he can't discriminate. His hand is running around all over the place. His hand is getting soiled up in the mess. And then he's licking that same fingers of his. He can't discriminate. It's brought up, the child is brought up in so much of complication, so much of mess up. Right? Now that you come to your peak, and then you forget your origins, then obviously it doesn't behove you, it doesn't befit you. This is where your beginning. And this is where you stand. And then you forgot your beginnings. You know, you were in such humble beginnings. You forgot all that. And you only think of yourself in the position that you are. You forgot where you were. And where you're going to be returning to. You forgot all about that. So the more you think along these lines, and you'll find that you're thinking straight. Your alignment is right. For your alignment to come right, you have to keep thinking on these lines. Keep thinking on these lines. That where you were, and then where will you end up? Then again, a heap of bones, disintegrating, stinking, stenching. Nobody wants to keep you for the night. Imagine the man died, right? And then, one night is too much. Late at night, alright, for janazah reasons and all that, it's alright till the morning. But after the morning, we don't want him now. Man must have contributed towards the whole home. Millions he must have contributed. It was his money, his sweat. He showed love, affection, got everybody studying, everything he got. But the day he died, now he's out. Get him out. I can't keep him more than that. You will cry about him, the separation, and the loving memories we'll think about, but no, he can't be in the house any longer. Get out of the house. So all his goodness, all his beauty, all his influence, all the contribution that he made, out of the house, he must be dumped into that hole, and then he's disintegrated into the soil. In a few days you find that his whole body is disintegrating. Worms and pus is coming out. Everything is coming to eat up his body. And you don't want to see that body. It was your own father, your own brother, your own mother, but you don't want to see that body again. So this is your beginning, this is your end. And when you think of your beginnings and you think of your end regularly, constantly, with conviction and seriousness, then you think that, no, my whole position in this life is something else. It's not what I thought about. I thought about something else, but really, I'm something else. When I think about myself seriously, correctly, unbiased, unprejudiced, and I think about myself, then really I'm something else. I don't deserve this type of position. I don't deserve this type of names. I don't deserve all these type of things. So I mustn't allow these things to get into my mind. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inshallah, today we'll discuss some of the adab pertaining to adhan. That firstly, the muazzin himself should be someone who is righteous, someone who has the knowledge of the azan, the manner in which to give. Then he should also know the timings of the salah, and the muazzin should be a male, and preferably someone of understanding and not someone too minor and too young. Then in giving the azan would be given out of the masjid, preferably on an elevated place so that the voice can reach far. And a person would give in a loud voice facing towards the Qibla in the state of wudu. And then when giving the azan, you would place your index finger into the ear or the entire hand over the ear. And then you would start off giving the adhan. And then you would say the words of the adhan. And the correct words of the azan will be saying Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. So either the word Akbar, when joining Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, so either the ra can have a sukun, a jazm, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, or either with a fatha, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And then when pronouncing it, one should not make a mistake of lengthening the for example, Allahu, or you lengthen the lam, Allahu, or the word Akbar, you say Allahu Akbar. So these are the incorrect pronunciations. So one will say Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. The word Allah itself, that could be stretched and lengthened for some time. Then when coming to Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, then again the correct way would be to say Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, and to change it, for example, to say Ashhadu by putting a fatha or a zabar on the sheen and not just reciting the ha, this would be incorrect. And likewise, when saying Allah ilaha, we must say Allah and don't change it into Allah ilaha illallah. Then when coming to the next set, Ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. So the correct way would be to say Ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. So again, when saying the word Ashhadu, the sheen should be pronounced clearly with a sukun and jazm on it, as well as the ha should be pronounced clearly with a fatha and zabar. And then anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. Muhammada will have a fatha. Some make the mistake and say anna Muhammadur Rasulullah. So it will have a fatha, it will not have a pesh or a dhamma. Then you will say hayya ala salah. And when saying hayya ala salah, you will turn your face to the right. And again, the correct way will be by pronouncing it and saying it as Hayya ala salah. That one shouldn't very quickly and swiftly say Hayya ala salah, that where the ya is pronounced without any tashdeed, but rather the tashdeed on the ya should be pronounced clearly Hayya, as well as the ayn on, should be pronounced with the fatha clearly Hayya ala salah. And also some make the mistake by lengthening the ya, that Hayya. So it is only one ya, so Hayya ala salah. And when ending off, it has.
Listen carefully, the third mistake, Hayya ala salah.
See, and some lengthen the ya as well, Hayya ala salah. So it is just a fatha, so Hayya ala salah. And when ending off, you will end off with the sound of a small ha, Hayya ala salah, and not salah, with a big ha. Then, after that you will see Hayya ala al-falah, also turning your face now to the left, and you will pronounce the word correctly, similarly as saying Hayya ala al-salah, that the tashdeed on the ya should be pronounced clearly, the ayn should also be pronounced clearly, and it should not be lengthened, the ya shouldn't be lengthened, Hayya, and nor the fatha, by saying Hayya, and when ending off, you will end off with a big ha, Hayya ala al-falah, as this is a big ha, and you will not end off with a small ha. And then when completing the adhan, we'll say Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah. And in the adhan of Fajr, after Hayya ala al-falah, the muazzin would add, As-salatu khayrun min an-nawm, twice. And then he would complete the adhan by saying Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah. Then before the commencement of the namaz, then iqamah to be given. And iqamah to be given with the similar words as adhan, the only difference being that the adhan would be said slowly, and the iqamah would be said swiftly. And in the azan, the sets of words would be separated, but in iqamah, the sets of the words would be joined together. That Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. So the sets of words would be joined with each another. And one should also take note of the common mistakes that are made in azan. So these are also the common mistakes that are made in iqamah. And another mistake that is made in iqamah normally is that when saying Hayya ala salah, so some join and say Hayya ala salah, ti Hayya ala salah. So it won't be joined in that way, but rather you'll just say Hayya ala salah, Hayya ala salah. Or similarly, when saying Qad qamati salah, Qad qamati salah, some join it and say Qad qamati salah, tu Qad qamati salah. So it will be said as Qad qamati salah, Qad qamati salah. And then the iqamah would then be over. Then the hadith also encourages us to reply to the words of the adhan, that just the same words that the muazzin calls out, these are the words that one should reply, the listener should reply with. So when the muazzin says Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, then the listener should also reply and say Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And when the muazzin comes to Hayya ala salah, then you would reply by saying La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. And when in the Fajr Azan, when the muazzin says As-salatu khayrun min an-nawm, then you will reply by saying Sadaqta wa bararta. And similarly, when the Mukabbir is giving the Iqamat, you would also reply to the words of the Iqamat in a similar manner. And when he says Qad qamati as-salah, then you would reply by saying Aqamaha Allahu wa adamaha. Then upon the completion of Azan, then Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has also encouraged us to recite Durood Sharif, and thereafter recite the dua of after adhan, Allahumma rabba hadhihi ad-da'wati at-tamma was-salati al-qa'ima, ati Muhammadan al-wasilata wal-fadila wa ba'athhu maqaman mahmudan alladhi wa'adta, innaka la tukhlifu al-mi'ad. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has explained the fazilat and the virtue of this, that Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam shafa'at will be compulsory in favor of such a person on the day of qiyamah.